Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Let's go live to Ukraine and Joseph Lindsley. And Joe, how you doing there? We hear that all of Ukraine is currently under an air alarm at the moment.
Yes, Bob. Good afternoon to you from Lviv. Another beautiful snowy day here. Yesterday was a calm Monday, but for the past 40 minutes, all of Ukraine has been under an alarm. There hasn't been an alarm in Lviv. I can't remember the last time. So it's a couple of weeks at least. And so there is a heightened sense of alertness during such times. There are some reports. The explanation for this alarm seems to be that there were Russian Federation jets that at about 3:06 p.m., so just about 15 minutes ago, passed into Belarusian airspace. And according to authorities in the southern city of Dnipro, because of this type of activity, it's been increasing, they say. And at present, alarms may become more frequent in Ukraine. So we're going into, you know, once again, another period of uncertainty. Meanwhile, through the past 24 hours in that city of Bakhmut, which the Russians, I mean, as Zelensky said a few days ago, the city's been almost entirely destroyed. Fighting still rages at the edges of that city. And meanwhile, the Russians continue to shell some of these recently liberated villages, including the city of Kupiansk, where our Ukrainian Freedom News team, thanks to WGN listeners, I guess about a month ago, delivered supplies. And the Russians yesterday hit the city hall, completely destroying it with a major missile attack. And then meanwhile, of course, that city of Nikopol, right across from the largest nuclear plant in Europe, they had yet another night of terror.
Joseph, I'd love to hear your comments on a story that was circulating quite widely yesterday about Western powers weighing how much support to maintain for Ukraine and what would actually constitute a victory. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is, it's a question on so many minds, people here, but also people in Brussels, people in Washington, on figuring out, you know, what is this moment? That's a big thing that we discussed when I was in that retreat in the mountains. For almost everyone here, the idea of victory is clear. It means the restoration of Ukraine's borders, not only from February 24th, but back to February 2014, when Russia took the Crimean Peninsula. The idea there being that, you know, when Russia was allowed to take Crimea in 2014, in the wake of Ukraine's Maidan Revolution, when the people took control of the government, the military was very weak, Russia swept in, and that emboldened Russia to plan for what they're doing now. So from the Ukrainian perspective, and I think from a few world leaders sort of recognize this, that you have to go back to those borders. I think a lot of people don't really want to actually face this question too much because it is a bit scary and dramatic. It's hard to conceive of a world in which Putin would agree to surrender. He's got so much to lose. And so I think it's the especially Poland and the Baltic states, the nations who are close to Russia, and all, including Scandinavia, Finland and Sweden. I think for them, they clearly realize that Russia has to be completely defeated. And then there are many people here, not just from Ukraine, but smart people around Europe and the United States saying, you know, what does Russia, when victory happens, what has to happen with Russia? And that has to be part of the question. And the smartest, most cogent theories I've heard, Russia is a federation of many different republics. A lot of those people, like the Chechen people in southern Russia, bordering the country of Georgia, they have been oppressed as well. And so maybe there needs to be some breakup of the Russian Federation. And this clearly would be it's a long-term plan, but there are people developing strategies on this now. And according to a few sources and friends I have, there are people within Russia who are quietly, obviously a great risk to themselves, working on such plans to somehow break up the Russian Federation.
When I hear the military strategists say that Russia is only going to abandon its gains, if its troops suffer catastrophic losses, I think, man, there's no end in sight, because the army there, the Ukraine army, is so overmatched. They've been doing really well, better than anyone thought, but still, when it comes down to it, the forces that you're up against are enormous, aren't they?
Yeah, and Russia has two things. They have, you know, the largest country in the world, so many resources. When it comes to geography and natural resources, they have lots of people. And then the key thing, they don't seem to care about the value of the lives of their citizens. They send prisoners and all kinds of other people with little training into fights. And that not caring makes the enemy very, very dangerous. And this is why I was speaking to you from Kharkiv last week. You know, I said people like the psychologist Jordan Peterson, that makes them believe that Russia is going to win. They think that there's no way you can say no to such a force that has no regard for human life. If we had, you know, if we look at how we respond to Islamic fundamentalist terrorism, you know, we could say, oh, we have no way we can ever defeat that because they don't care about human life. But then on the other side, and, you know, maybe to end on an optimistic note, you have to look at the force of people who want to live, the people who want to be free. And I think, you know, and that's why this is such a big battle between good and evil, between freedom and tyranny. And if we want to believe that freedom can win out, anyone who wants to join that has to somehow get involved in this fight.
Mm. Yes, you have to hope that freedom will be strong enough to win in this fight. And are you warm? Do you have heat? I saw where President Zelensky has called for $840 million in aid to support Ukraine through the winter.
Yeah, I mean, so far in Lviv, you know, it's intermittent power outages, but people are adapting. And for those throughout Ukraine where they can't access heat, there are these heated tents set up. And in translation, they are called points of unbreakability. Just again, underscoring this idea that, you know, Ukrainians, you know, will not be unbroken. So, yeah, you know, things are continuing. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with this current alarm. And you know, certainly the infrastructure is quite weak. But it's a lot of uncertainty. I was just thinking when I was talking to those people in the mountains, the strong idea emerged about Ukrainian civil society. And people in the United Nations and all kinds of bureaucrats use those terms. But I asked these Ukrainians, I said, you know what this means better than anyone, because your society is, you know, is struggling for, you know, in an existential fight to exist. And so just I'll leave you with this. So the five things that make a society that can actually withstand anything, including these, you know, power infrastructure problems, are these. One, trust. Two, the belief that you have agency. You have an ability to change and transform your society. Number three, you have to be threatened. This is a difficult thing. I think it's a question for everyone in the West. Like, in order to build a good society, you have to have some kind of enemy that makes you work together. Number four, self-sacrifice. And number five, you know, when everything seems bleak, you need to have a connection to some narrative, to some rituals and tradition, so that in these darkest moments, when you are freezing, when you can't get power, you know that this somehow makes sense. It's part of this kind of a beautiful story of struggle through history. And you only get that by being connected to each other through rituals, through tradition. Mm. And so that's sort of the five ingredients, I think, that will enable Ukraine especially to get through this bleak winter. But hopefully also will inspire people in America and other countries where we, you know, sometimes we feel like our own country is collapsing with division and hate. I hope that this Ukrainian example, even in this darkness, can be a bright light to other nations around the world.
Well said. We can only hope. And I hope you get the all clear there soon, Joseph. I'll tell you something. What you deal with every day makes our Chicago weather and traffic problems here in the morning seem very, very inconsequential. We'll talk tomorrow. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Bob.